I'm Nick Harcourt, and welcome to another episode of The Sound of Success, the podcast where we talk with movers, shakers, and just plain cool people about music. On this episode of The Sound of Success, we're joined by Lauren Mabry of the Scottish band Churches, where she's the lead singer, plays drums and keyboards, and co-writes and co-produces the songs with Ian Cook and Martin Doherty. At the time of this conversation, at the end of October 2024, Lauren is readying the release of her debut solo album, Vicious Creature. Great to see you, Lauren. Thanks so much for taking the time to come hang out on my podcast.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a while, sort of.
Yeah, it has. You and I actually first met 2014 when Churches performed on the TV show I hosted, Guitar Center Sessions. And then most recently, we just sort of bumped into each other at an event for the band Health, where you actually performed with them on a new version of their song, Ashamed. And you told me about your upcoming solo album, and a couple of questions and phone calls and emails later, and here we are talking about your new music. I'm really happy to get into it with you.
Yeah, it was a happy coincidence to bump into you, and you did most of the hard work that evening, I feel. I did 3 minutes of singing, and you did all the intense questioning of the band. So I was like, I would like my own intense questioning, I guess. I don't know.
It was a fun night. It was over at the Grammy Museum, and they're cool guys. You know, my job is easy when the subject of the interview shows up. It gets tough when people don't want to be there. But fortunately, I've been able to avoid a lot of those interviews more recently. But maybe we could go back a little bit. And if I could ask you about your early school experience, how old were you when the piano came into your life, and drums a little bit later on as a teenager?
Yes, I think I should probably check with my parents. I don't know how old I was when I started playing piano, but I remember being in primary school and learning it. And I think that it was quite a chore of a thing for a while, until I realized that you can play things that aren't in the books. And then it started to become more fun for me. And yeah, the idea of sitting down and practicing scales never really filled me with much enthusiasm. But I remember being in record shops and seeing other kind of tab songbooks and things like that. And I was like, oh, I guess you can play stuff that's not on the lesson curriculum, and you can, it just felt quite exciting to take. I remember having like a best of the 80s piano tablet, like sheet music book, and playing things out of that. And when they started to sort of sound vaguely like what those songs almost sounded like, I was quite pleased with myself. And then drums came along when I wanted to be in a band, basically. I'd met some other teenagers who were in their own bands, and I'd needed a second instrument as part of my high school music curriculum. And I was like, I wonder what I'll play. I don't feel like I'm a guitarist, and I definitely don't want to sing in a band. So I think drums is the one for me. And yes, it worked like that for a long time. But I guess it just shows that you don't know what your strengths are a lot of the time, because I wanted to be the drummer and then reluctantly did backing vocals. And then in another band, I was the keyboard player who reluctantly did backing vocals. And then slowly people just started to take my instruments away, and I just mostly sing.
And then ended up fronting bands. What about those early bands you were in, Boyfriend, Girlfriend, and Blue Sky Archives? And I believe Churches came about sort of indirectly through that other band when Ian came in to produce some work.
Yes, I think I'm very lucky that all the guys from Blue Sky Archives are still my friends, because essentially Ian did poach me out of their band to be in a band that he was creating. But yeah, I think I was incredibly lucky that early on in my, I suppose, what became a music career, I was in bands with really thoughtful, open-minded, kind guys. And that hasn't always been my experience of life, and it has not been my experience at other points in my career. So in a way, I think that was a great, it was a great learning experience, because it felt like a very safe space, as the 2024 terminology would go. And yeah, I don't think I never felt like othered or isolated when I was in the band or in the rehearsals or in the garage writing. It was only when we started playing shows or getting written about, I realized that, oh, I'm not on the same level as these guys. And it was about how other people externally treated me differently, I think. But I think I'm very lucky to have had that kind of nucleus of just really nice, interesting, smart people. And Jamie, the guitar player in my first band, is still to this day one of the best guitar players I've ever played with. So I think I was spoiled from an early age with high quality players, to be honest.
What about finishing school? Obviously, after high school, university, college, you wanted to be a journalist. In fact, you became a journalist. Was that what you thought you would be doing when you were a teenager? Was that your goal?
There was always part of my brain that loved the idea of being in a band, but it doesn't seem realistic. And basically, everybody I've been in bands with has gone to music school. Like, the guitar player from my first band went to music school. Ian and Martin both went to music school. So I've always been the non-trained person in any band I've been in. And I used to feel very insecure about that. But now I think that, like, having just the more primal connection to the music and more, I'm much more instinctual or instinctive, I think. And I don't feel strange about that anymore, because I think that's the kind of heart part of churches, especially, I think. But yes, I wanted to be a journalist. In hindsight, I think I wanted to be a music journalist because it felt like that's as close as I can get. If I can't do it, if I can't be in the band, if I can't be on the stage, can't make the records, I want to just be as close to this stuff as I can, because I love music and I love the stories behind it and the way it's made. And I think I was the terrible reviewer because I didn't ever want to shit on anybody's records. And also, I was 21, so really, what did I know about much? Not a lot. But yes, I think interviews and kind of digging underneath why somebody made it and how they made it was always more exciting to me than an album review, I think.
Interesting. So when you started working with the guys, I believe originally it wasn't necessarily going to be a band that performed live. It was a project. Let's make some music and see where it goes. You ended up writing an album. And at some point, you were not just hanging out doing backing vocals. You were writing the songs, and you stepped forward to be the front person.
Yes. I think my understanding of it was that Ian and Martin they'd worked together in certain things over the course of years. And they were looking at this not as a thing that would become a band, but they were trying to become like writers for other people. And this was kind of going to be their pitch document, sort of. So they had a few songs when I met Ian when he was recording for my other band. And then he had asked if I would come down and sing on the demos. And if they got picked up, I would get paid like 50 quid for the demos or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the way they like to tell it is that when they muted Martin's vocal and had just my double underneath it, they were like, oh, that apparently is the aha moment. But I wasn't there, so I don't know if that's actually what occurred. But yeah, I think it is interesting because I'd been in bands with people that I'd known so well that didn't connect or didn't make it to that degree. And then the band that eventually became Churches, I didn't know them. I'd only known them for like a handful of months when stuff started going off online. And yeah, I think it's a very odd experience for anybody to go through anyway, but especially with people you don't know very well. And I remember having a meeting in a pub where they were talking about wanting to make a real band. And what did I think of that? And how did I want to do that? And I'm glad that even like 23-year-old me had the wherewithal to ask to be more involved in the writing and to ask to be cut in a way that I was in the other bands. I don't really know where I got the gumption for that, because there's no reason, but I think I was like, well, that's what I do in the other bands. And if I would have to spend all this time on this, I want to be creatively invested in it. I want to be involved in it. And I'm glad I did, because I think it would have been just a very different experience if you were only getting a certain small percentage of the songs and you're not heavily involved in the creative. I think that would have been quite unsatisfying for me, I guess.
You mentioned that stuff started going off online, because I know that you posted a song, I think it was Lies, on the internet, and it got immediate reaction. BBC Radio 1 played it, and all of a sudden people are saying, so who are these people? Are they going to play? You did some under the radar shows and then put out the single, The Mother We Share. And then I'm skipping along here. Not long after that, Daniel Glass came and saw you, who I know, and his label Glass Note Records signed you for the debut album, The Bones of What You Believe. And Churches were off and running. Can you talk about those early years with the band and how the perception of you as the female singer, as the front person of the band? You alluded to a little bit, perhaps some sexism that you encountered along the way in the early days. How were you able to sort of roll with that and then move forward as the front person of this band that all of a sudden a lot of people were talking about?
I think when I look back on it now, especially now it's been like 10 years since the first album, it is quite clear to me now that that was an unusual thing for to be happening. It's this thing that we'd all hoped for years and years and years would happen in any band we were in, but I don't think it occurred to me just how like a bolt of lightning that was. And yeah, like when I think that we were underprepared in a good way and in a bad way. I think when I think about how ramshackle some of those first shows were, I like that's terrifying to me that there's no backup plan now. We would just take a laptop out, put it out in the sun, and then be confused when it stopped working and there was no backup plan. So now we would never do that. But I think that that's what was special about the band at the time, for me anyway, was that it did feel very honest, it did feel very authentic, and it was a bit messy around the edges. And I think that's what made the music sound like that too, because yes, we were kind of pulling from the synth pop playbook, but the songwriting wasn't really of that era, if that makes sense. I feel like we were painting with the palette of that time period, but with a more alternative band headspace when it came to the tunes, maybe. But I don't know. I think it's been interesting in the last couple of years to talk to Ian and Martin about it, especially around the anniversary of the album, because, you know, both those guys are older than me. And I think I just always assumed that they knew what they were doing, or they didn't find it as overwhelming as I found it, because I was like 24. And, you know, the difference between 24 and 30 or 24 and 40 is quite substantial in terms of like your maturity level. So I think as I get to the ages that they were when they started the band, I'm kind of like, what were we doing? This is so bizarre. But I don't know. I think in a way I'm glad that maybe when I was 23, 24, I was in some ways less thick-skinned than I am now, but also tougher in some ways. I think if I'd been aware in advance of a lot of the things that would happen, then I think I would have been more fearful of it. So yeah, I think there was just a lot of like learning on the job.
I think for me personally, you know, anything creative that I've done, sometimes the best things come out of just winging it and really not knowing what direction you're going and just hoping for the best.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that when I look back on that about our band, I'm like, yeah, it wasn't cooked up in a lab. It wasn't, you know, our manager was our tour manager for a lot of the time. I remember early tours just being like the three of us and our sound man driving around in a van, and that was it. And now when I think about like the machinery that's around churches, like, yeah, it's just such a different ballgame. And I remember Daniel Glass coming to see us play at this very grubby, scruffy venue in London when he was trying to sign us. And now I'm like, I don't think Daniel wanted to be in that really dirty dressing room. He definitely didn't sit down at any point, because I was like, yeah, this is probably not, it's too dirty. It's going to get sticky stuff on his trousers. But yeah, I think at the time I was like, oh, this is a normal thing that happens. And now I'm like, no, I don't think that happens to every band. So
I like that you noticed he didn't sit down.
I barely wanted to sit down. And I was a 23-year-old that was always in divey venues. And I was like, well, this one's pretty spicy. Yeah.
So three more albums since then, up until the present. Every Open Eye, Love Is Dead, and Scream Violence from 2021. Career highlights including Best New Band and Best British Band at the NME Awards in 2015. Then they named you Best Band in the World in 2022, co-headlining the Hollywood Bowl with Grace Jones that same year. You've played pretty much every major festival around the world, and you moved to Los Angeles. I want to get to the solo album in just a moment, but first up, why LA, and how has living here impacted or changed you personally and as a songwriter?
I don't think as a Glaswegian person I'm used to this level of sunshine. It's still disturbing to me. Even before I got on this call, I put on sun cream because I was like, what if it comes through the windows? It gets me when I'm not prepared for it. Yeah, I guess when I think about why I moved, it was kind of in a roundabout way because I wanted to make music outside of the band. I think on the third Churches album, I just kind of became conscious that I've put all my eggs and all everything into this band. And if this ends tomorrow, I don't have any backup plan. I don't have any CV. I've got nothing. And then I looked at the guys in the band and I was like, oh, they could make records for other people. They do write with other people. They do produce for other people. So they have like a structure or a safety net in their life that I don't have. And I think that's the interesting thing about bands. Bands are a very delicate ecosystem. And I think that in some ways, everybody thinks that the singer has it made because they're the one that people know the most. They're the face that you associate with the thing. Well, there's not really, once your band ceases to exist, what's your job? There isn't really, everybody really wants a singer until the band is finished and then nobody needs a singer, whereas everybody needs everybody else. So I think I was like, oh, maybe I should be more sensible about my life and just make sure that I have, I don't know, or just there was things that I wanted to do, but I wasn't doing them because I was conscious of how that would impact the ecosystem. And yeah, so in 2018, I moved to Los Angeles just wondering what options there might be, whether that was like trying to write for other people or trying to write music for film or TV, or I was like, what is this? And if I don't ever try any of these things, then I won't know if I'm shit at them, if I'm great at them. I have no idea. So that's what led me to here. And I kind of thought at some point I would make my own music, probably for nobody to hear, but just for my own enjoyment. Or I think the best part of being a band is the connection and the creation of things together. But also I think if you only work with the same people in the same structure all the time, then you only get to use a certain part of yourself. And I've been doing that since I was 23, and that feels like a long and formative chunk of your life to have existed within a certain hierarchy, almost, she said, tentatively. But yes, and then I guess I moved here and then pandemic happened. And I think one of the few positive things to have come out of that was that church has had some good Dark Night of the Soul Zoom chats, and then we made what ended up being Screen Violence in that time. And I think that that was a needed thing in that time for the band. The fact that other options that we would normally have been presented with all disappeared, and we were like, we are going to make a record, the three of us, and see what happens. I think that was a helpful time. But also I think that having the space, the physical space to write lyrics at my own pace without worrying that I'm not going fast enough for somebody else, or I'm getting immediate feedback on the lyrics before I've finished writing them. I think I found the isolation actually quite creatively helpful. And then that kind of tickled a part of my brain where I was like, oh, I think I want to do something where I get to really think about the words and the stories and the narratives more than I can in the band. So yes, that was the slow burn, 6 years to make a solo album plan.
So we're going to get to our music questionnaire shortly, but let's expand on what you were just talking about, moving to LA, having the time to write with no particular deadline or agenda for that matter, from the sound of things. I know that like many teenagers, you spend a lot of time in your bedroom with your headphones on, listening to artists that you loved, like Tori Amos, Fiona Apple, PJ Harvey. That's not the kind of artist that you would expect that kind of music to make its way into a church's song. And I'm guessing, you know, confessional female singer-songwriters, a little bit different from being in churches. So when you set out to start writing songs for yourself, how did you approach it? It's got to be completely different. Obviously, you said you had time, but to start to incorporate your own influences exclusively into the work.
Yeah, it took me a long time to realize how much self-editing I've done. Not that it was even consciously asked of me by people a lot of time. It was sometimes things that I'm doing preemptively. But yeah, I think, you know, being in my teens or my 20s in bands, I know the music that I can put on the aux cable that's going to please everybody. And I know the music that I can put on that is going to get some eye rolls and a little bit of condescending patter. And I think, yeah, like, nobody ever purposefully said to me that you need to code switch to be in our universe, but that is just what it is. Until I made conscious choices on really wanting to change the feel of how I was touring, especially in the solo era. Like, yeah, there could be like weeks at a time on tour where I would go without interacting with any other women in a venue, in a radio station, wherever. And I think that's quite an odd thing to experience. If it was the other way around, I'm sure that the guys in the band would have found that confusing and disturbing and strange. Right. So I think that just adds to the feeling of isolation. And then I suppose the positive of that is that when I wanted to feel seen or understood or connected, it does mean I put my headphones on and I listen to a record or I read a book or I watch a film or a TV show where I feel like, I don't know, stories that are more connecting to me are told, I think. And my only brief with the solo stuff was that I really didn't want it to be a shit Church's album. And I think there's a, yeah, look, I'm very lucky that people associate my voice with a certain sound or certain instruments. But yeah, I think I knew pretty quickly that I was like, well, I don't want it to be like that. Like when I think about, like I was looking back on solo records of women who had been in bands and I was thinking a lot about Gwen Stefani or Annie Lennox. And like, you know immediately who that is because of their voice, but they weren't trying to make a Eurythmics record or make a No Doubt record. It was very like clearly a separate thing. And I think once I got my head around, I was like, not even going to set myself rules beforehand, just anything but this, if that makes sense. Because I want to be respectful to the band that we've built. But also I was like, I want to do something else. I want there to be allowed some acoustic guitars there or some piano or just to start songs with a story in mind or a title in mind or like really foreground the lyrics and the storytelling. And yeah, I think it took a minute to get my head into that headspace because I've written such a specific way for the band for so long.
You talk about isolating or isolationism, obviously COVID, the pandemic, you get a good serving of that like we all did. Being in a male-dominated industry, as we've already alluded to, which can be very uncomfortable sometimes, depending on the room that you're in and the people who are evolved or unevolved that may be in that room. But how does that single voice, that isolated voice, how is it represented in the new material?
I think there was definitely a period of time I went through when making this record where I was conscious that a lot of the lyrics were not writing the wrongs of the past, but trying to deal with some feelings and experiences and topics that I hadn't written about in the band for whatever reason. And I think when I look at it, that's probably the first batch of songs that came out. Like I think about like Change Shapes and a song called Crocodile Tears and Shame, those songs, and a song called Sorry, etc. I feel like those songs are dealing with probably a sadness and an anger and some kind of grief for that. Some things just weren't what I thought they were going to be. They, like, I just expected differently from certain experiences, I suppose. And I think in a way I had to skim all that off the top before I could get to the next section of the record. And I think it became really important for me that I was like, I want this music to feel joyful. I want it to sound joyful. I want it to feel freeing. I want, even if you're writing about something negative, I want it to feel theatrical and dramatic and fun. Like I think for a long time, I lost sight of the fact that I'm supposed to be having fun while I do this. Not that we don't have fun in the band, but, you know, we're very serious, stoic Glaswegian people. We really make stuff up down earth sometimes when it doesn't need to be. And I think when I thought about if I'm going to take these 18 months, 2 years to myself, what do I want being in the studio to feel like? What do I want tour to feel like? And I was like, I want it to be fucking fun again. Like, I think, and I'm sure that that's, you know, something that the guys are finding in this small hiatus is that it is kind of about figuring out, so much of a band is figuring out how to connect to other people. And so much of this time, I think, is about me trying to figure out how do I connect with myself? Like, what do I actually want to write when I'm not trying to figure somebody else out? And I don't know if that's a personality thing or a gender thing, but I feel like there's a lot of me assessing other people's needs and assessing other people's wants and trying to find out where I fit in that. And I think that's great in terms of collaboration, but you can really focus group yourself out of existence sometimes. So I think I was like, yeah, I just want this to be fucking fun. I want people to come to a show. And we started to do that on the last Churches album for sure, like lean into the theatrical side of the live show a bit more. But it still has to work within a band format and everybody has to be comfortable with what's happening. And I think I just was like, yeah, if I owe myself anything, it's like pushing myself to reconnect with parts of myself that I had maybe muted a bit.
And sometimes it's just nice to be in charge as well.
Well, I suppose so. I think that I will be a better collaborator from having had this experience. And I have been collaborating with other people on the record. But yeah, I think as with any relationship, if you love something, set it free. And if it comes back to you, blah, 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 that stuff. And yeah, I think obviously in a band, everyone has very different, you've got different tastes, you've got different opinions, you've got different outlooks, you've got different beliefs. And I think that sometimes it's just, it's good for people to take time where they don't have to consider all of that and bring all of that into the studio. We have good baggage and we have bad baggage. So I think for a while I was like, maybe just something with no baggage for like a hot second.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the album. I've heard one song, and I am very intrigued based on this conversation. The album Vicious Creature is going to be released on December 6th, 2024. And I say that because our conversation is actually happening about 6 or 7 weeks before the actual release date. What are you thinking once it comes out? Are you going to go out there and perform on this album?
Yes, that's the plan. I think there'll be some touring in the springtime, and then there's a couple of festivals that have come through, and we're just kind of putting the plan together. But I think it'll be exciting to tour again with the album out, because I played some preliminary shows last year, just trying to work, not even workshop the material, but a little bit. I think, again, I was trying to push myself to just frame it differently than we frame the band. And it's been a very long time since Churches have played unreleased material at shows. And I think I also wanted to figure out what is the character of me on this record? Like, how do I want to feel? What's the voice of it? Who is that? And, you know, Churches have played thousands of shows, and that I think that I have a very specific persona within that, in terms of the lyrics I write and the way I perform it. And I kind of wanted to see what I would be like outside of that context before we finalized the record, if that makes sense.
It does. Do you see yourself when you form with the band, obviously, and now solo, do you see yourself as a character? Do you see that person as separate from you? Is she a she? Do you refer to her as a she? Or is, you know what I'm saying? Is there sort of like a multifaceted component of you that can break out as a character depending on the material that you're performing?
I think in the band, certainly, I definitely had to create some, like a sort of almost semi-persona that's just like 20% tougher than what I am. Because I think right at the start of the band, I'd never fronted a band properly before. I had no idea what I was doing, really. And I think all the good and all the bad just felt very intense a lot of the time. So I kind of figured out that I do need some kind of filter in between me and this. And also, yeah, I think a lot of the circumstances as we talked about previously, I think that does lead to certain kinds of disassociation from the thing in a way that's not necessarily super healthy. And I think that was something I was conscious of. I was like, I want to feel more in my body when I'm playing. I want to feel more connected to myself and to the lyrics and to the people that I'm playing the songs for. And I think it was just about kind of unlearning some of the bad habits maybe that I'd gotten into with performance stuff, I think. Just, yeah, I think I really just wanted to find a way to feel more comfortable in my own skin, whether that's in the writing or whether that's in the performing. And that's why I think it was important to me to make sure that the touring party was more balanced than it has been in the band. And playing on stage, I was very conscious that I wanted there to be more women in the band, certainly. And the band is now female musicians and non-binary musicians. And I think just the content of the songs, but also just the comfort level, I was like, I've never had that. It's always had to go through a filter. I've always had to edit certain parts of myself, or just even silly things like on the bus, guys will walk around in a t-shirt and underwear, but I would never do that. And I was like, oh, just little things around. Like, this doesn't even occur to me to change that, but I know that I will always get dressed lying down in my bunk before I get up and go out, because it's just these things that you just don't do. You can't do. And I was like, no, I never really thought about that. I was like, I didn't even think that there were things that I was changing. I'm like, yeah, I'll go get changed in the bathroom in a venue rather than be in the room with everybody else. And I think just even the feel of a tour bus when it's like a more representative of normal society or something makes it feel less like I've just gone to Mars for 6 weeks and then I come home. So I don't know. I think it's like things that never occurred to me 10, 12 years ago that now I'm like, these are simple changes that can just make things feel more normal, I guess.
I never really thought of it as a tour bus as being a microcosm of the macrocosm, but I guess it pretty much is if you're the only female on the bus and you're with a bunch of guys who are just acting like they would if you weren't there.
Yes, like they will act like they're hanging out with a bunch of guys because they are. And there's obviously a tour with like lovely, lovely people, and most of the crew that works on my stuff works on churches also, so it's a nice overlap there. But yes, it is very wholesome to never once has anybody in churches given me a little sheet mask just because they saw one in the shop, or like if they went to get, there's a lot more gift giving. I was like, oh, our love language is like cute little gifts left in people's bunks. I was like, you don't get that when you're in a van with blokes, really.
Yeah, I'm sure. Let's jump into the questionnaire, the questions I ask all of our guests. And thank you again for hanging out with me. This has been a lot of fun. What is your first musical memory?
I think it would be listening to music in the car with my parents. I think in the 90s, they were very into Annie Lennox. They were very into like Sade. My mum's huge on Whitney Houston. And my dad, he enjoyed most things Michael McDonald adjacent, a lot of Crowded House as well, like things like that. And I think, even though my parents aren't musicians, I think I grew up in quite a musical household in terms of they were always buying CDs, they were buying records. And it was a kind of moment to go down and choose a CD and put it on and like sit and listen to it. So they were good active listeners, I think.
So a little pop music and a lot of amazing female singers.
Yes, we love a diva. We love a diva.
What was the first music you bought with your own money?
I think Spice Girls, I believe. I was very into all the British pop bands in the 90s. So I remember, and I would go to like Woolworths and get the cassette singles and things, and then the CD singles of stuff. So yes, there was a lot of things that maybe I wouldn't put back on now. PJ Duncan, some Steps, some All Saints. Girl bands, boy bands. Very, very keen on those.
My sister, I have a sister who's around the same age as you, and the Spice Girls were her entry into music, that whole girl power thing that, you know, was more of a commercial pitch than perhaps anything real. But did that get your attention?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think I understand the critiques of certain parts of it, but ultimately to me, I think that the messaging of that was incredibly positive. And I just remember being so excited by it. Everything else that was kind of pitched was like boy bands, and it's not about, I think that what makes me feel warm and fuzzy about the Spice Girls to this day is that it's celebration of girlhood. Like only a handful of those songs are about boys or about men or about relationships. So much of it is about your experience as a girl and your friendships and those things. And I remember being so excited to see them on Top of the Pops or see them on the Brits or any number of those things, going to the cinema to see Spice World, the movie. And I just think something that centers young girls and like validates their experiences and what they're interested in as being worthwhile is quite rare. And I think that's why something like Taylor Swift or Olivia Rodrigo makes me weepy. Like I've been lucky enough to see both those tours this year. And I weep like a strange old woman at these shows because I just think it's so cool and exciting for the interests of young girls to be really celebrated in that way and not made fun of and not shamed. And yeah, it's rubbish for the people that go with me because I'm just all moved the whole night. So, yeah.
Talking of live performance, what was the first concert you went to without any adult supervision?
myself and my sister went to see Boyzone. That was a big one. It was a tough time there because I was really worried about how I would ever choose between Ronan Keating or Macaulay Culkin being my husband.
How old were you?
I think maybe like 10. So yes, definitely a concern that didn't ever come up after that. But yes, I remember, and to this day, I love all live shows, but I'd love a big pop show. I think like the feel and the sensation of like going into the venue and the excitement of it and the scale of it it reminds me of that era of being a little girl, I guess.
What do you listen to when you want to dance?
I think it's got to be something classic. Like I'll put on some George Michael or Step by Step by Whitney Houston. I put that on last night. We had a barbecue. People were pretty into that. Yeah, I think any of the classic 80s, 90s, I like a little algorithm shuffle in that space.
Love me some George Michael. Every now and then when I'm doing the radio show here in LA and I'm sort of feeling a little bit bored with myself, I put on Faith or something like that. Wake myself up, let alone the audience.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, his voice, I think, was so singular and, yeah, a treasure.
What about when you're feeling sad? Is there anything you listen to then? Do you listen to music to take yourself out of that sadness, or do you listen to music that will just sort of like burrow in?
50-50. I think I used to lean into the feeling a lot more, whereas now I feel like I can go there on my own. I don't need any additional stimulus to go down the rabbit hole of the sads sometimes. But yeah, I think especially when you're processing certain things or certain kinds of grief, I think can feel quite lonely. So having songs that can make you feel understood in those moments, like when you experience certain things in life, I think it is certain kinds of loss. When you look out a window and see everybody getting on with their day-to-day life, it seems so completely upsetting and disturbing. You're like, how can you possibly just be going, do you not know? And I think then I'm like, okay, I've got to go to like some Sinead O'Connor or Elliot Smith or something in those spaces. But I for my own mental well-being, I'm like, I try not to go down the nosedive in the same way that I would have a few years ago, probably.
If you could only hear one song for the rest of your life, I know it's a very sad question, talking it sad, what would you pick?
I think I would go for something nostalgic. I think I would go for maybe some Whitney or the stuff that reminds me of childhood and family, I think. So maybe like Weather by Crowded House or something like that, that kind of transports me back to and that's a very sad song, but it's also a happy song, so it could work for either space, or something like, I don't know, maybe like Fleetwood Mac or something that makes me think of that era of life.
Sounds like your childhood was a happy time. You refer back to it.
I think also maybe like living so far away from, I mean, maybe you find this, I don't know, but living so far away from your friends and family, you kind of can reconnect with that time of your life differently, maybe. And yeah, I think about it quite a lot. I'm like, man, it was a good time. Was it before there was all these responsibilities and things that I wish I didn't know about now, and I have to know about it, and I don't want to. I think I was quite lucky that it was kind of a little bubble of just innocence, I guess. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite music video? And if so, why?
Ooh, I think that Missy Elliott has made some of the best music videos of all time. And when I think about that, like, there was like a handful of years where she was just everywhere and everything and every... And I love so much that the aesthetic and the visual stuff of her work really was part of the storytelling. And you knew immediately when the video opened who it was, in the same way that you knew immediately when a song started who it was. And I guess, yeah, when I say like, maybe Get Your Freak On, maybe.
Do you have a recent musical discovery that you'd like to share with our listeners? It doesn't have to be necessarily a new artist or a new album, but something that is new to you.
Well, I think everybody in the world is probably obsessed with that new Fontaines DC record. And that's probably not new information to anybody. But I think that band is so exciting. And the lyrics and the live show, to me, I'm like, surely that's festival headliners in like 2 years. It makes complete sense to me that we should. If everybody's thinking that rock, that for a while there, people were like, guitar music is over, rock bands are over, and now you've got people like Fontaines or Idols or English Teacher, and I just think that feels very exciting to me.
It's great to have guitars back. And, you know, I know a few people who work in the business of making and selling guitars. Guitar Center, obviously, we were talking about, but through the years, you know, I met people at Fender and Martin and Gibson, and the pandemic was good to them as well, because a lot of kids picked up guitars for the first time. So I think that's going to go on for a while. I think we're at the beginning of some good rock and roll.
I hope so. I'm excited about it. I'm like, get the guitars back out, guys. Says me, who was in a band that had no guitars for a long time. But
I know, but you've got guitars on your new record, right?
Yeah, do you? Yeah. And I think the last Churches album, we got more guitars in there too. So maybe it's just the natural ebb and flow of things.
Is there a band or artist that you personally love but feel they never quite got the big break they deserved?
Well, I think this might be his moment, to be honest. I think Bartiz Strange's next record is phenomenal. I've been lucky enough to hear it already, and it's really, really special. And I think this is his time. So maybe in 6 months from now, this answer would be different. But I would say Bartiz Strange. Yeah.
Do you have a musical guilty pleasure?
I think I don't. I used to believe more in. This is my era of life where I try not to shame myself out of things I enjoy. So I don't know if I have a guilty pleasure. Musicals, does that count as a guilty pleasure? I know some people feel bad about musicals. They don't enjoy them. But one of my favorite places I'm visiting, if I visit my friend Katie in New York, she also loves a bit of musical theater. And we go to Marie's Crisis Cafe and just soak in the piano performance musical theater business. And it's just such a different kind of storytelling than anything you do in a band. And I find that really fun and freeing. So yes, if I'm alone in my house, I probably will sing, you know, Give Me Old Razzle Dazzle to myself in the kitchen.
I love a musical. Broadway, obviously, or, you know, on the stage is the place. But, you know, sometimes at the weekend, myself and my partner were like, is it time for a Fred Astaire movie again, or, you know, whatever it might be? And they just make me feel happy, you know, and going to the course is just its own experience. Is that something that you ever would see yourself doing? Is that something you've conceived of ever doing a musical?
Oh, man, I would love to do that. And I just think writing for different characters and different perspectives is very fun. Is very fun. I think sometimes I just get tired of myself, and I'm like, I spend a lot of time when you're making a record thinking about, what do I feel about this and what's happening to me? And I think that's one way to create, and it definitely is my primary way of creating. But I do love, you know, that's why I'm such a dorky reader. And like, my boyfriend always refers to my TV shows as my stories. So I love a wee story. And I think, yeah, it would use such a different part of my brain than my own writing. So yes, I'll do it. If they book me, I will go.
All right, we're putting it out there. Whenever you need a new musical, Broadway producers, I'll connect you with Lauren.
Yes, thank you.
And as we're wrapping it up, it's our final question. How are you feeling right now?
I feel good right now, which is not something that's the normal sensation sometimes. But no, I feel happy. I think it took making any record is a bit of a journey, and there were highs and there were lows. But I don't know, when I'm trying to step back from it, I kind of think I would never even have 5 years ago conceived of this happening. So I think I'm quite a fearful person, but I'm good at pushing myself over the edge when I have to, sort of. So I think I've kind of done that to myself, and now I feel quite excited at the possibilities that this has opened up for me in terms of creativity and the future. So I was like, thank you, past me, for advocating for future we, maybe.
Laura Mabry's debut solo album is called Vicious Creature, and depending on when in time you're listening to this conversation, it's released on December 6, 2024. So cool to hang out with you for a minute and talk about music, your music, and a little bit about life, the universe, and everything. It's cool. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
The Sound of Success is hosted and produced by me, Nick Harcourt, for Nude and Ginger Productions. Our theme music is by Keita Klein. For more episodes, find us on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening.